Okay, we welcome you to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. Let's have our joke now.
Hi, I'm Trey. I'm your recovered alcoholic joke teller.
Hey, Trey.
I haven't done this in a while, so I'm going to pick one that I like. A drunk stumbles into a biker bar and orders a drink. He sees three men sitting at a corner table, so he staggers over and looks the biggest, meanest biker in the face and says, "I was at your grandma's house today, and man, she is one fine-looking woman." The biker doesn't say a word. His buddies are confused because he's one bad biker and would fight at the drop of a hat. The drunk leans over again and says, "I made out with your grandma, and she's the best kisser I ever met." The biker's buddies are starting to get mad, but the biker still says nothing. The drunk leans on the table one more time and says, "I'll tell you something else, boy. She liked it." At this point, the biker stands up, takes the drunk by the shoulders, looks him square in the eyes, and says, "Grandpa, go home."
I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Rachel. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise, that might will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready? If so, let's start the meditation. And now we're going to say the fog light prayer. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. Okay, there is a solution from the big book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Peter to read the appendix to spiritual experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is.
Peter, recovered alcoholic. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself in many different forms. Yet it is true that from our first print, that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must have been in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it's not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate, overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes he's undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could have seldom been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of a spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance, and that principle is contempt, pride, investigation, Herbert Spencer.
Okay, please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane meeting mode or just turn off. Okay, so here I'm going to welcome Marion. Thank you for coming out, Marion.
Okay. Thanks, Rachel. Good evening, everyone. I'm Marion. I'm a recovered alcoholic. It's great to be here and great to be sober. And this is my home group. And it's always awesome to be able to serve in any way here. And just grateful for this life God has given me, that I have a life, that I get to be alive, that I get to, you know, do this journey in Alcoholics Anonymous and have this relationship with God and be able to be a mother to my children and to be able to be a sister to my brothers and sisters and an aunt to my nieces and nephews and, importantly, a wife to my husband and a member of good standing in Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety date is November 11th, 1989. And I've walked in these shoes in recovery for a long time with a lot of ups and downs and a lot of, you know, I was praying over here and earlier about, you know, through fair weather or foul, God has kept me tight and kept me close to him. I can't even take credit for that. You know, I can't. And I'm just, I just get overwhelmed with the fact every single time I get behind a podium and I get the opportunity to share my experience, strength, and hope in this journey with God and this journey of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's an honor, and it is a privilege. And you know, the talk before the talk is always my poor husband. I put him through. Holy Lord Jesus, you know, it's crazy, you know, because I come from a place in my life as a, you know, now a 64-year-old woman with 34 years of recovery, still trying to figure out what I'm going to be when I grow up, you know, I do. And I think that that's okay at the same time. You know, it's been a journey where when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous, my first sponsor, I saw the way she dressed and I would dress like her. I heard the things she'd say and I'd parrot her and I'd say the things she said because I wanted to be anybody else but me. And it was the theme of my life growing up, and it was the theme of my life when I hit the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I found when I hit the door of the Northwest group of Bellingham, Washington, I did a little stint in one treatment center for 30 days. And our big book talks about, should you wish this above all else? Should you wish this above all else? Above, how am I showing up as a mom? Can I show up as a worker? How can I show up as anything? How can I show up as anything unless I'm sober? And I remember in that treatment center, I had this therapist who was like 4'10", and I'm all of 5'1.5", you know? But she would walk in the room and her presence would just scare me. I was like, because she's gutting me out. And, you know, I did the first three steps in treatment and I'm like, I'm raw and it's real and I'm feeling for the first time in my life. And I remember her telling me, you know, things weren't safe at home. My husband was an alcoholic and an addict. But that line I just described to you, that I said to you earlier, should I wish this above all else? And I wanted to be there for my children, and I wanted my sobriety more than anything in the world. And it has remained that way. And so if you're new in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, that isn't what's going to keep me sober, but it's my number one priority. That and this relationship that I have, quite honestly, it's this relationship with God who gives me the sobriety. You know, the old timers used to say back in the 80s, you know, God brings you to AA and AA brings you to God. And we have a group here called Alcoholics and God, and you're going to hear that a lot. And you're going to hear that from my mouth today. Because I can tell you, I can only suit up and show up and be here behind this podium today as a matter of a daily surrender to this power greater than myself. I'm going to take a little drink here and a little shout out to Mike Chase in Minnesota. Love you lots, brother. And anybody else who's joining us in the virtual world tonight. So when, you know, I've done these series a few times here. And I started out the first few times doing 12 weeks. I'm kind of not a 12-week girl. I'm kind of a 6-week girl, you know. I like to bundle things, you know. Paulette did a magnificent job breaking down the book, The Power of God in Her Life. It was just a beautiful, beautiful task. And here's the deal. It's like I was sitting in a house of worship one time and someone had said to me, the pastor had said to me, you compare yourself to other people. And then and the reality is like I'm married to this beautiful man here, and one of the things he always tells me is just be Marian, whatever that is. So you guys, I don't know when I'm gonna cry. I don't know how long this is gonna last. I'm sharing my experience, strength, and hope. And what I used to do was apologize for that. In that comparing. You know, if you're here and you're new, listen, here's the deal. What happens with that? You compare yourself to somebody else and you always lose. You always lose. That's what I was told, right? Because I'm either not good enough for you or I think I'm better than you. And when I hit the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I walked in that door for the very first time, I learned so early on, which was so much grace and so much beauty behind it, that nobody here is better than me. And nobody here is less than me. And for the first time in my life, I was able to hold my head up and look the world in the eye. Now that came from this place of, you know, some people have heard my story here, some haven't. I'm going to go into a little bit of it, because otherwise you won't know who I am. And I came from this family in Bellingham, Washington, and my dad was a World War II veteran. He worked as a laborer. He worked in the tugboats in Alaska, and he chopped wood and carried water for real. And he had calloused hands and calloused feet, and he worked hard to provide for our family. And, you know, my father wasn't really super emotionally available. You know, he is an alcoholic. My mom was raised up in the Aleutian Islands in Alaska. And I really believe he's 17 years older than my mom. And when he came to Alaska on that tugboat and he took my mom and brought her to Bellingham, I believe that saved her life. I do. But mom and dad were riddled with alcoholism. And our house was six kids. And my mom adopted another one just to throw another potato in the pot and feed somebody else, you know. But there was neglect and there was abuse and there was alcoholism. And that is not the things that make me an alcoholic at all. And what ended up happening with that too is just being able to take this journey through the steps many times and having good sponsorship. You know, I was ashamed of who I was as a little girl. We didn't have clean towels. We didn't have clean socks. We didn't have food in the, my mom would make one meal a day, you know, that kind of stuff. And for years, I would be ashamed of who I was. I would be ashamed of being Dude's daughter. His name was Dude. He got it in World War II. You know, I was ashamed of being Marion the Third. And I can tell you today, like here as we build this foundation and I talk about steps 1, 2, and 3, you know, when my current sponsor I've had since 2005, and when she meets with us the first time, to get to know us, she doesn't say, tell me about your life. She says, tell me about your mom and dad. And if we've had broken relationships with our parents, as we've had, you know, that shame and that whatever, I can tell you today through good hard work in Alcoholics Anonymous, through outside help and all that beautiful stuff, I couldn't be more proud to be Dude's daughter. I couldn't be more proud than to be Marion's daughter. That's the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I come from this family and we're riddled with alcoholism. I can tell you today, on the flip side of that, today, my little sister got sober first, 35 years sober. I'm 34. My sister Marlene, who's battling cancer, keep her in your prayers, is 33 years sober. And my brother Eric is 32. And it all happened shortly after my mom passed away. And what happened in that year, it's 1986. I have my fourth child. And he died of a crib death in the beginning of 1987. At the end of that year, my mom died. And I'm riddled with alcoholism. It is so dark in my life. I have no God in my life. I've got three little kids to raise. I'm 27 years old. And I can't see the light of day. My husband, actually, he went off to the races in his alcoholism like never before and wasn't home. And I'm raising these kids by myself. And all I could think of was that I was going crazy. You know, if you're riddled with that much grief, it's kind of, it's paralyzing. So I go to this therapist, and this therapist tells me, she goes, I told her I'm going crazy and I'm having all these feelings and I don't know what this is. I lost my child. I lost my mother. And she looks at me and she tells me, when you lose a child, you lose your future. And when you lose a parent, you lose your past. And you're having trouble living in today. And I always say this, I think that that was one of the first ominous warnings to get that we're going to. I mean, why would I remember that? That's 1987. This is 2024. But I can hear those words and I can feel those words. You know, my little brother, he was putting forms of alcohol into his arm and living under a bridge. You know, and that little brother, where I was busy, you know, I'm raising those three little kids and I'm trying to raise them better than I was, you know, and I have the house, I'm giving them the clean clothes, two cars in the driveway, and I'm a drunken mom. And I would be like, my little sister took sedatives in the morning and drank. My big sister made Bob Marley, you know, she would hang out with him, you know. And my little brother is living under a bridge. And that little brother gave me another ominous warning, right? So I'm pointing the finger out at my little sister for what she's doing. I'm pointing the finger out to my big sister for what she's doing. I'm pointing my finger out to my brother and what he's doing. And that little brother says to me, one of these days you're going to take a good, long, hard look in the mirror. And that happened on November 11th, 1989. The day before that, I got drunk twice. It was my 30th birthday. I had a bad 80s perm. That was a bad 80s perm. That was the bottle that it was. My hair was colored Clairol Champagne Blonde. And it was because of the name of the, you know what I mean? And I was a wreck. And I was a wreck. And I had no intention in my life. See, I wanted to get sober. In our book, it describes, here are the methods we tried. And I was trying every method I could to not drink. It's like, oh, if I don't do the green stuff. Oh, if that other stuff doesn't go up my nose. Oh, I could do this first and that first. And I'm trying to manage and control my drinking. Manage and control. And I meant it. I meant it with all my heart. I'm like, I can't show up for these kids. I'm a drunken mom. I had no, it's like I'm begging this God of who I don't understand. And through that process, before that November 11th date, I had found a God of my understanding, because I started sending my little kids to this little Baptist church on Sunday mornings from 9 to 1. You know, if you're an alcoholic mom, 9 to 1 is a good time to have your kids at church, so you can nurse your hangover, right? And I found this God, and it was torture, because I found this God of my understanding, and I couldn't get sober. And I'm, you know, that place of me that wasn't good enough, that couldn't, you know, couldn't measure up. Now I've got this God of my understanding, and I can't get sober. And I'm going to run into this preacher, and the preacher's telling me, Marion, just pray. Just keep praying. Just keep praying. And suddenly that day, November 10th, 1989, my last drunk at Denny's in the morning, home passed out, drunk again that night and the next morning. See, this is the thing. The day before I'm sober. With any of us, we don't know when that day, when that moment, when any of that's going to happen. I didn't decide that day, oh, I think I'll get sober now. Now I've got it. You know, it's not like that. But I come to in the morning and I go down to my bright pink 80s bathroom, and I look in the mirror, and I see something I'd never seen before. I was at the jumping off place. I couldn't see my life with a drink, and I couldn't see my life without a drink. I had this neighbor, he'd gone to treatment at St. Joe's Hospital, and he had gone there, and he had a few months off of the stuff you stick up your nose. And for some reason, in the back of my mind, the thought comes that I know wasn't me. The thought comes, you need to go to treatment. You know, and I'm not saying that treatment was everything and all that, but for me, 30-day stint to come off everything and to be there separated from my life saved my life. And so I look in the mirror and I'm having this moment, and I tell my husband, and he says, well, you just need to go. There's beer in the fridge. There's green stuff in the drawer. You just go take care of yourself. I've heard it all before. Heard it all before, because I'd sworn off with or without a solemn oath. See, lack of power was my dilemma. I had no power of choice and control to not drink. And somehow that morning, in that moment, my big sister, I had called her. I said for years that she just showed up. But I called my big sister. My big sister came over and she took me. I was wearing my husband's boxer shorts, a hoodie, my matted hair, Birkenstocks, and I just showed up. I didn't know you called, you do intake, you do any of that stuff. And I showed up in that treatment center. And I can tell you that I did a first step there. I don't know what was the Hanley or the this, that, or the other thing. I have this friend, Bill Cleveland, who talks about, you know, we get so busy saying who's doing it right and who's doing it wrong. And, oh, if you do the steps this way, right? I mean, of course, right out of the book, absolutely. But the reality is this room is full of people that are clean and sober today by God's grace. Now, I don't know about you, but I think it's pretty powerful that on a Thursday night, and it's 80 degrees out in South Florida, I don't know about you, but on my own power, that's pretty crazy that we're sitting here today. Something's keeping us in this chair. Nobody's chained to the chair. Nobody's held down. If you're court ordered, you might be a little bit miserable. But, you know, I mean, because that kind of happens too, right? So what ended up happening for me is I wholeheartedly take these steps in treatment my first time around. My first step was this inventory of, you know, we had to add up the dollar amount of all the money we ever spent on booze, you know, and things like that. And really what it was a pointer to the powerlessness, the pointer to how powerless I am over alcohol and over any of how powerless I am, you know, and I needed to hear that, and I needed to see that, and I needed to experience the humility. And that's, you know, Bill talked about that, you know, that every, you know, they say, oh, the first step is about hope. The second step is about this. And da-da-da. Every pointer is pointing to humility. Every step is pointing to humility. The first time that I admit to God, to myself, to another human being, the exact nature of my wrongs, the first time that I admit in a crowd, I'm sitting in a room in treatment, and I'm telling all this stuff about my drinking days and everything that poured out of my life. So for the first time, and guess what, guys, that first time we're accepting some kind of power greater than us is the first time we're asking anybody for help. Group of drunks, good orderly direction, great outdoors, one of my favorites, besides the God, you know, I'm reaching out outside myself because I don't have the power, choice, and control to beat this thing. I don't. And I think that how that meets me today and at 34 years old or 34 years sober is the second half of that first step. because it's always those things. You know, this talk tonight, I pray, is covering 1, 2, and 3. And the reality of it is that our life is always going to come to another surrender and another surrender of things in our life that we can't manage, that we can't control, that we have no power over. It is. You know, I had some things come up this week for me, and not for me, but some people in my life that are hurting, you know. And one is my walking my sister through her cancer. Another one is a friend who's having some real, real struggles. And I'm going to just share that in a general way. And a young lady I know that passed away yesterday. And those things, like, as we build our foundation for life, as we build our foundation in the 1 and the 2 and the 3, everything points back to those first 3 steps in our journey in Alcoholics Anonymous. If the stones are properly in place, okay, if I admit I'm powerless over alcohol and that my life had become unmanageable, the second half of that first step is, how am I trying to manage and control my life? Okay, so as we build this foundation for life, as we build this home, I mean, just a way of describing it, I'm a home. I'm a host to God today. We're a home. We're a host to God. You know, later on in our book, it talks about, I'm going out to work for that power. Doesn't matter what else I do. You know, diverting from our primary purpose of money, property, and prestige, diverting from our primary purposes, who am I going to date and how big of a house do I live in and how much money is in my bank account? And, you know, who's looking at me and who isn't looking at me? You know, how's that working out? I can tell you, the longer I'm sober, the more I know that I don't have this. I don't have it in me to a taste of money driving me, or a taste of property driving me, or a taste of prestige driving me. Drives me right back to this power called God. It does. I want to read something to you in this little book. And if you're interested, I mean, here's the deal. In the house, in the host for God, in this Marianness, in the Eunice, in this relationship we're building with God. Guys, we got one life to live. That sounds like a soap opera. But how am I doing? How am I doing behind closed doors? How am I doing with, you know, my Chase, lovely, one of my best friends in the world. You know, he's off with his mom. You know, how am I doing bringing that home to my family? How am I doing that bringing it to my kids? How am I doing outside? I mean, first we learn it here. Yes, in AA, absolutely 1,000,000%. But we get to show up for people. I get to be a host for God. And this little, I just want to say this. This is pretty cool. Because I believe as we let go and we change and we get transformed in this power, and that, you guys, I'm going to tell you from a kind of getting a little up there lady. I'm not going to call myself a, you know, I'm not 39 anymore. But I'm going to tell you, the more that I serve this God, and the more I have a 21-year-old grandson that's staying with my husband and I right now. And, you know, it's been tricky, but good and beautiful. And I just believe this for myself, that my husband used to talk about the dash. You know, I'm telling Luke, you know, God, he wants to make something his life and you know, be an, you know, influence. And what am I going to do with my life? And I said, if all they ever say is she served God and she served God well and she helped some people, then I'm good. You know what I mean? Because all these ways that we try to build this false self and this false identity, guys, the striving and the pushing to do, to be, I'm going to make something of myself. How about what God wants to make me? You know, so anyway, that might sound a tiny bit like a soapbox, but oh well. So this says this. This is Merton, and it says, at the heart of Merton's spirituality is his distinction between our real and false selves. Our false selves are the identities we cultivate in order to function in a society with pride and self-possession. Our real selves are a deep mystery known entirely only to God. The world cultivates a false self, ignores the real one. And therein lies the great irony of human existence. The more we make of ourselves, the more we make of ourselves, the less we actually exist. So how do you take that as an alcoholic? How do we take that as an alcoholic, right? So what does our book tell us? The selfishness, self-centeredness, the root of our troubles. The root of our troubles. Me, me, me. All I think about is me, you know, or I might not be much, but I'm all I ever think about, you know, or whatever, what I'm getting, what I can take, what I can write. We must be rid of self. It has the power to kill. You know, I got jammed. My husband and I call it being a little jammed up. I got jammed up with some stuff this week, with some stuff, some friends hurting, and I had some sponsees calling, and it was tricky. I'm not getting back to them, and I was just like falling a little bit. But the second I returned the calls, started returning the calls, I could feel the blood start flowing. The things start happening, right? We must be rid of self. And there seems no other way to do this but with this power called God. So in this great foundation we're building in 1, 2, and 3, I'm a firm believer, like foundation, cement, done. Are we making mortar without sand and all those things that our big book says, right? I think that all those things that we've surrendered in our life, the false identities, the, hey guys, identity here, right? What do? Like my sponsor shouts to me anytime I get with myself is like, Marian, just go help somebody. Just go help somebody. Have you guys ever been that way like I am? Where the second that phone rings and you don't want to answer it, you know, I have this one sponsee. I know this doesn't, maybe, I hope it sounds like 1, 2, and 3, but it's kind of 12, but whatever, it's Marianne. You know, that I had this sponsee for the longest time, and I called her my blow your hair back girl, right? As soon as you answer the phone, the wind just goes whoosh, like everything just comes at you at one time. And that girl has ended up being one of my greatest. I mean, I love her so much, because what happens when that happens, right? I'm out of myself immediately. Immediately. Whatever's going on in me is going to be all focused on how I can help her in that moment. So, all right. I'm going to breathe. So in the beginning, we're powerless over alcohol. Our life had become unmanageable. I can't manage. I can't control my life. I need new power flowing in. In step 2, it's talking about came to believe in a power greater than ourselves. And I think this is such a stumbling block for us for 2 reasons. One of them is that we try to play God. Right? I'm putting myself in the same sentence, right? We try to play God. But I think the other piece is we haven't reconciled. We haven't reconciled with the God, perhaps, of our childhood, as it talks about in the chapter to the agnostics. We see where religious people are perhaps right. Just reconcile with it later on in the steps. But it seems to be one of two things. I have a block because you believe in this God and I don't. I have a block because that religion hurt me when I was a child. I have this block, because it was mom and dad's. I have this block because I'm not good enough for that. I have this block because if they saw who I really was, I'm certainly not enough for that. You know what I'm saying? So I think there's two ways that we can separate from that power. One way is like I just described, and then the other way is, and I guess it's a little bit easier. I'm going to laugh at myself for a minute here. I think it's a little easier to accept God's will in your life and not strive so hard as you get a little more mature is because you're more tired more easy. We don't tire as easily, our book talks about, right? When we're talking about that thing, but it's like, I know when I'm playing God. I know when I'm trying to make something happen. You know, I got some news about some stuff today and I was like, I should tell this person and I should do this and I should do that and I should do this. And what if this happens, you know? And my husband called me and I was away from the house and he says, "Where are you?" I said, "I'm in the parking lot in Boca and I'm praying. I'm praying." And what immediately happened for me in this practice that I use is I could feel my blood start flowing again. I started feeling like, because what was happening inside of me, I started getting full of fear. I started getting full of just fear and anxiety. And all these things were just flowing through me. But as soon as I stopped and I turned my thoughts towards this God and my understanding and praying the prayers that I was praying, I could feel it all come back. See, that's step two. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. How does that meet me today? Took step two at the treatment center in 1989. You know, how does that... I'm not believing in this power. And it goes so live like this, okay? I get up here and I share. I'm telling you, I prepare, but I have no idea what's going to come out of my mouth. I don't. And what can happen in agnosticism is this. Is I can doubt myself and I can talk about the doubt and I can burn my husband's ear off on the way here. And it wasn't that bad at the exact same time. Because here's the deal. If I'm not trusting and relying on God at 34 years sober to stand in front of you and deliver a message that's from him, then I'm not trusting and relying on God to fill my mouth. I'm not trusting and relying on God. You know, my prayers are when I get up here is that God would touch your heart, that God would, I could be a vessel, God, that, you know, let the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable in your sight. Let it be that way, you know? So anytime I'm not, you know, if I'll be in, you know, because I'm sober long enough and I'm connected enough to God because this is a relationship I work on, and that doesn't mean I'm great. I'm just saying, when I'm in fear and when I'm in self-reliance, right? And so I can recognize it. Like, God, I'm sorry. And the great, there's this book called, I love it. I mean, it's called A Purpose-Driven Life, and something I've read on the side. But the greatest thing that God wants from us is for us to just trust him. Put our trust in him. You know, I mean, have you guys ever turned something over to God and it got worse? I mean, I don't know, you know, because we burden ourselves so much in our life of the way that we're not putting our trust and reliance in this God of our understanding, right? But what I do love too in my conversations with my grandson, that's just having some fun, you know, talking to some, you know, he's not an alcoholic, but I'm talking to him about, hey, Luke, he's asking me spiritual questions and all this stuff. And it's like, Luke, the realm of the spirit is broad and roomy and all inclusive and never exclusive. That's what we say in AA. You know, hey, Luke, guess what? You know, it's the only place what I know of where you can be a Protestant, a Jew, Jewish or Catholic or Buddhist or, you know, atheist or agnostic. And we come together and we all get to, Luke, guess what? We get to stay sober. You know, That's life-giving to my grandson who isn't even one of us, you know? But somehow, this power in this room is working. I have a little secret. I believe that God remains anonymous in, like the rest of us. I just do. And I remember getting caught up in my spirituality and getting too spiritually, oh my God, like pompous about where I was, you know, and 15 years sober and hitting rock bottom and having another surrender. Because I believe this whole thing is this surrendering one more piece to God and one more piece to God and one more piece to God and one more piece to God. Because I really believe that God truly, you know, have you ever known somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous who you just get around them and they feel different and they sound different and they're full of hope and there's all that stuff, right? And I just want to be that person today. So I want to do something here and I might call it a wrap after this. We'll see. But so we know we're powerless over alcohol. We know we need to come to believe in this power greater than ourselves because lack of power is our dilemma, and we don't have that power. I want to read this first. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup, just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. He was much a fact as we were. We found the great reality deep down within us. The reality deep down within us. I don't know about you, before you believed in God, have you ever just had the daylights, I'll put it nicely, scared out of you? Just daylights. And where's the first place you got went? Even before you knew God, God help. That's like deep down in every man, woman, and child. You could hear some, you know, I heard this story one time about someone being in a tunnel and the car was going in the wrong direction, right straight for them and screaming out to God, you know? It's like, it's down within every single one of us. I believe that before I knew. I believe that when my dad would be in Alaska and I'd be a six-year-old girl up in my bedroom with a big t-shirt on and dad's in Alaska and I'd look up in the sky and I believe there was something there. Even though I thought I wasn't enough, I believe something was there. You know, that same measure of faith inside, deep down inside of every single one of us. You know, I used to have this old timer named Craig. He'd sit across the table from me and he'd say, you're a child of God and God don't make no junk. He doesn't. So in the last analysis, only there that he may be found. It was so with us. We can only clear the ground a bit if our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, enables you to think honestly, encourage you to search diligently within yourself. Then, I love this so much, if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. With this attitude, you cannot fail. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you. We're here. We're sober. Something in my life I never want to take for granted. This young lady who passed away yesterday, the way she's been walking out her life, there but for the grace of God go I. Deeply. Okay. I want to go here. So, step three says this. So, I hope you stay with me on this. It's a little, let's see. So, this was explained, sore third step prayer, taking it in a totally way, this way. So, here's some promises that go to it before that, though. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch which we were to pass to freedom. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. Guys, we had a new employer. We're going out to work for God, right? Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could. I don't know about you. Did you ever wake up as an alcoholic and say, I wonder what I'm going to contribute to life today? We became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. Drop the mic, man. I don't know about you. I wasn't much of a contributor. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind. Oh, I don't know. Peace of mind? What? As we discovered we could face life successfully. I mean, if you're an alcoholic in here and this does not like sound like a really cool idea. Okay. So, we discovered we could face life successfully. We became conscious of his presence. We began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. Reborn. I don't know if you guys have gone through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and look back on your life and go, God, I'm so, who was that? Who was that woman? You know, who was that guy? I'm not who I was. I have been reborn in Alcoholics Anonymous. They used to say Alcoholics Anonymous is the only place you can say the F word and God in the same sentence. You know, I mean, we're just a ragamuffin bunch, which I'll bring some stuff on that next week. But so here's step three. Here's the deal. There's the self. We have to be rid of selfishness, rid of it. Right? So we're now at step three. Many of us said to our maker as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee. Take myself. To build with me. So there must be a different thing, right? There's me. There's still me. That, you know, the one that deep down inside me, every man, woman, and child, each and every one of us, to build with me and do with me as thou will. Relieve me of the bondage of self. See, the selfish and the self-centeredness is a manifestation of the disease of alcoholism. It is not who I be. It's not who I truly be. Child of God, I deserve to be here. You know, deep down inside me, this fundamental idea, it's not the truth of who I am. I think we can get so tripped up in, oh, I was selfish today. Well, guess what? You're an alcoholic and there's going to be selfish times and there's going to be selfish moments and there's going to be fears and there's going to be, you know, things like that. But because we build this relationship, I offer myself to thee. Build with me and do with me as thou wilt. meaning not as I will, right? As thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them. The prayer today in the car in Boca, I'm sad, I'm a little torn up. That victory over those troubles I had earlier today. I had victory. Victory over them that I... Okay, now I'm going to go. Bond itself that I may better do that. Well, sorry. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness. I'm here to bear freaking witness today. I was tore up a little bit today and I'm, you know, it doesn't mean I wasn't going to show up and doesn't mean I was going to get loaded. It doesn't mean any of that stuff, but I was off balance. I wasn't in the pocket. Okay. But I was off immediately, you know, turn to God. So take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, not my power, thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. How cool is that? We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. And this is again and again and again. We see the selfishness crop up. We see the fear crop up. We see those things happen because we have a disease called alcoholism, not a disease called alcoholism. Those things are going to come. You know, we have a strange mental disorder, right? Many of us do recover if we have the capacity to be honest. We're not all, you know, playing with full deck most of the time, right? So I have to turn back to God. I get to turn back to God. You know, and then I was worried the first time I went through the step three. It's like, oh, I'm turning my will and life over to God. I'm going to end up in an airport in a robe handing out pamphlets and, you know, the rest of my life. You know, it's not like that either. Because God's burdens are light. God's burdens aren't heavy. The ones that I place on myself, the ones that I pile on myself are too much that we do. And they can be just the silliest little things, but we used to pull vault over mouse turds, you know, and we do. But I'm just grateful to have this new life today and, you know, I'm grateful to have the foundation in Alcoholics Anonymous that through those three steps specifically, I have a foundation that's built for life. You know, I remember getting on the highway in Boca one day and I was like, oh my God, what if that obsession ever came back? What if that ever happened? And it scared the daylights out of me. And I don't know about you. I hope that picking up does scare the daylights out of you in that. So what is that power? Anything that's blocking that power has to go. Anything that blocks that power has to go. It does. Because when you feel that power, when it's talking about that and the promises before you go into step three, when it's saying to feel that power flow in. Holy cow. Treatment center, 30 days. We walk across the street and it's November and I'm in Washington State and I'm like, wow, these leaves on the ground are orange and red and God, they're spectacular. They're beautiful. You know, I get a whole new set of eyes. I get a whole new different perspective. We do at life. Like, have those leaves always been the orange and red like that in November? Has it always been that beautiful? I took my kids up the North Cascade Highway. I was 6 months sober and I had this $700 old Audi car and I had the three kids in the back seat. And I go up the North Cascades Highway. I've been there a million times with beer cans in the back of the car. And I go up that highway and I remember just having to pull off to the side of the road because it was breathtaking. Like it literally, I had to pull off the side of the road because I couldn't, I was just, it was probably altitude too, but you know, a little bit, But it was so beautiful, it took my breath away, and I couldn't believe I was 6 months sober, and my children were in the car, and I was taking them somewhere, and I was alive, and I was being a mom. I was, and that was given to me by Alcoholics Anonymous. I can never repay Alcoholics Anonymous for what it's given me. Never. And what I found, what I give in Alcoholics Anonymous, I can't outgive God. I pour out to you, you pour into me. Man, it's amazing. It's amazing. Whether it's a diner or it's a meeting or it's a working with a sponsee or answering the phone to the blow your hair back girl or whatever it is. Man, what a life we've been given, a second chance, reborn. I'm not that woman I was. Wow, kids, do you see that? Look at that river. Look at those trees. James has been to Washington, you know. My husband, you know, it's amazing. I mean, for me, it is. Germany might be beautiful for these people, you know. Or wherever that is. But I could feel it and I could see it and I was alive and I was present. And I'm telling you, that beats a life when I'm selfish and self-centered and full of fear and resentment and pride and angry and greed and gluttony and envy and sloth and all that other yucky stuff that we can slide back into. But we have a way out, guys. We have a way out from under that. Not just alcohol. Sorry, guys, if you're new, what has to change? Well, about everything, right? It does. But man, first commitment in that home group, cleaning ashtrays, that was my job. And I had a sense of purpose and I had a sense of belonging and I have never, ever, ever lost that. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a life worth living today and I am grateful to God. I'm grateful to you and thank you for having me. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay. Now we're going to have the secretary's report.
Hi, I'm Brandon, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seven tradition, which states that every group should be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. And we also have QR codes on the chair backs if you have that. As the baskets are going around, I've asked Marianne to come and read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in AI identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be recovered.
Marianne is a recovered alcoholic visiting from New York. Which one, I'm sorry, the recovered?
Yep.
Thank you. We are not cured of alcoholism, recovered but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime, but we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than the body, page 23. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
Thank you. A 1940-style big book sponsorship from the forward to the second edition. Alcoholics Anonymous of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried. 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses. And among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, and came to believe and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Is anyone needing a sponsor? No, we're all recovered. Great. Okay. And then announcements. Broward County Intergroup is where you can buy AA-related literature and medallions. Intergroup is also responsible for creating our Where and When and scheduling the AA hotline. Stop by and visit them. And then we have BCIC is responsible for bringing meetings into places where people like us can't get to an outside meeting, such as jails, detoxes, and rehabs. They meet monthly to organize the meeting schedules at the 12th step. Do we have any members of BCIC here? Nope. Okay, next. And then we have Marion for another 5 more weeks. She killed it tonight, so make sure you're here for that. And then we have, of course, our home group, Monday night. Big Book Studies Workshop Monday night, where the Big Book comes alive. Join us for fellowship at 6:30, and the workshop starts at 7:15. We also have CDs, mugs, large print Big Books, and the Little Red Book and Big Book dictionaries for sale. We meet here every Thursday, starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. Thank you. Back to the show.
I'd like to invite everyone to our, Monday night Big Book study. And those who wish to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle. Let's all close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever and ever.
Thirsty bodies aching. I am desperately in need of restoration. Yeah. And I am ready for you to take me higher. Yeah. The only thing that I can do is I'm praying, 'cause on my own I just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try, but with you I become a much stronger man. Getting on my knees puts me back on my feet again. Load is heavy, too much accumulation. These possessions that I have amount to nothing at all.
zan, zan, zan. Oh, when you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you, baby, baby. Yes, when you're laughing, when you're laughing, yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you're crying, you bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. Out in the dark,
Michael Chase, here's that song you've been asking me for a million years. I finally pulled it out the corners of my mind, and here you go. Song is. God bless. I love you, Mike Chase. Bye.
I think you know this one, don't you? Shine a light on.
shine your light on me tonight.
Yeah.